Welcome to the Sailor Noob podcast, where a super fan and a noob talk about the original Sailor Moon episode by episode. I'm your host, Mikan Hana, joined by my co-host.
I'm the co-host and the noob. My name is Caliban. If you want to be a man, you got a lot of thinking to do.
That's right. And we're a couple of magical people ready to moon crystal power make up this episode. Sailor Noob is brought to you by one magical cat's quick thinking and true love's kiss.
And cruising on your motorcycle.
That's right.
Just thinking. But watching the road.
Yeah. Safety first, everybody.
Start seeing motorcycles.
That's right.
On the seeing the road.
His top hat, actually a helmet.
It's a fully rated carbon fiber top hat.
That's right. Today we are talking about episode number 69.
Nice.
Mezume yo nemureru bishoujo, mamoru no kuno in Japanese. Awaken the Sleep and Beauty, Mamoru's Distress, the English translation, and the English title, Prediction of Doom.
Mezume, that's the awaken?
Yeah.
And then Nemuriru is...
Nemureru.
Don't you go running around Nemuriru.
That's sleeping.
It's so weird still, because that's, you know, that's my love or my friend to a female in French, Mezume, you know? I think I pointed that out before.
Is it I know mezami.
Mezami
is the masculine. Mezame is feminine.
Yes.
Yeah, that is interesting. I don't know why that is. They're very far apart from each other in the world. But language is weird like that.
But it's so well, I guess I don't know. Would you? It's just sort of European. The whole feel of the show.
Of this episode?
Well, no, of the entire series is continental.
A little bit, yeah.
You know, with the, and like, I'm a tuxedo man.
Yeah, I know.
My flair.
Yeah, I know. He's very.
They stop short of pencil mustache, but if he had it,
yeah,
you could understand.
He's very Zorro-esque.
That's way over on the other side of the
both
oceans.
Yeah, I suppose you're right.
Yeah,
and maybe it's the cape. I don't know, man. Have we ever talked about Mamoru's name and what it means?
It's a protector.
Yeah. So, well, you and I talked about this off the air. But so Mamoru means to protect. And fun fact, Makoto was almost named Mamoru because she's kind of a protector in the Senshi. So his last name, Chiba, means it can mean local, and it contains the kanji chi, which also appears
local?
In the... Yeah, it means local.
Like around here?
I'm getting to it.
Oh, sorry.
And the kanji chi, which also appears in the word chi-kyu, which is the Japanese name for earth, and ba, meaning place or location. So basically he is earth protector... or protector of Earth.
Chiba's a city, too. So is it like local city?
Or like Earth city,
Earth's.
You know.
You guys walk around talking this stuff.
So, but anyways, people have...
Town.
Yeah.
Welcome to city town.
So he's, yeah. So that's kind of what Mamoru's deal is. So,
I can see that.
Yeah.
Also, standoffish jerk. Is there a word for that? Is that a thing?
No.
In Japanese?
No. Although
Mr. Crapula?
I have seen Nako Takauchi say that she made him kind of her ideal man because she likes guys who are...
Nako did a lot of drawing, maybe not a lot of dating in college.
She likes guys who are like not necessarily unobtainable, but they just seem uninterested.
I wouldn't call Tuxedo Mask Byronic. Byronic?
Yeah, like Byron, right.
Necessarily.
Right.
But there is Darciness.
Yes.
Darciousness.
I just want to shake him in this episode.
I'd have to see him coming out of a lake in just a shirt and see like how that I rates.
Think you would think we would see that at some point, because I feel like that's something that could happen for sure. So yeah, I would like to see that as well, and like just see him do a tete-a-tete. I mean, if him and Usagi have fought.
We've talked about this, the European influence on Japanese culture, mm-hmm. and this is 100% evincing of that. If this was, if there's a future where Admiral Perry and boys don't roll in into Tokyo Bay, and we just keep going, there's a Sailor Moon where, first of all, Mamoru is the hero of Sailor Moon.
Mm-hmm.
There's a precedent for maybe Usagi maybe chronicling his adventures in a Tale of Genji type thing.
Yeah.
But it'd be like, oh, and then like today Mamoru was very sad, but I asked him what's wrong and he said, I must be strong for my family. And then he like cut like six guys' hands off. But oh boy, that Mamoru, so great. Do you know what I mean? But instead, and I'm not saying they wouldn't have come up with this on their own, but mm-hmm. I think you can definitely see the influence of continental culture, and also, you know, England is included with that. In the Bronte and the Austens and the Gothic romances of this character who is like
mean.
he's mean, but he has his reasons to be mean.
Yeah,
you know, this is the prejudice. We are in the prejudice part of the story right now.
Right,
he can't be with her, and that's gonna come to a head.
Yeah,
today.
Let's tell us about it.
I will.
All right.
We open. Speaking of European fiction, we open in a bedroom.
Yeah,
in a castle.
Uh-huh.
Where a dashing knight looks down on a beautiful sleeping princess. Usagi is narrating what's going on, and she says that the prince braved the forest of briars and kissed the princess who had been put to sleep by a witch. So this is what we're doing, Sleeping Beauty here.
Yeah.
Usagi is reading to Chibiusa, and Usagi's all ready for the big finish romantic ending.
Mm-hmm.
But Chibiusa says, this is boring. And Usagi's like, what? This is a great story. But Chibi says she's already heard it.
Mm-hmm.
Undaunted, Usagi finishes the story, happy ending, just to see that Chibi is out. She is asleep.
Yep.
Usagi wants to wake her up so she can hear this amazing ending. She should just shake this shaking baby. But Luna says, let her sleep. She's dreaming of her mom, probably, who is captured in the future. Remember that last week?
Yeah.
Remember when we heard about that?
Remember that horrible thing we just heard about?
Speaking of dreams, we cut to Mamoru's place, and he's tossing and turning in his own dream. A dream of his wedding to Usagi.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like a romantic moment. They lean in to kiss, but the ground between them explodes.
Yeah.
And he's left alone on the ground. A voice tells him that he can't get close to Usagi because the world will crumble when they are bound together. And Usagi will meet misfortune. Mamoru says, you again? Who the hell are you making me have this dream again and again? Why are my teeth falling out? The voice replies, it's an inescapable truth. But Mamoru wakes up in a cold sweat.
Mm-hmm.
He takes out a framed picture that he still has. Maybe it's under the mattress of himself and Usagi. But as he gazes at it, the glass breaks and Usagi slumps forward in the picture as if dead. It's apparently all in his imagination. But he remembers the voice from the dream that Usagi will be met with misfortune unless he stays away. And he wonders what he can do. The next morning, Mamoru is in his minty fresh workout clothes.
And
he's not running. He's on a bridge. He's looking over the water and imagining Usagi's face and pondering their plight. Just then, the actual Usagi's face and her entire body arrives. Usagi says that I came across you so early in the morning. It must mean that God... dot, dot, dot. I didn't know she was religious.
I didn't
she
either.
She says Kami-sama. So does she mean just like gods or like a positive religious force in general? Like... when you know, like when you say, like, "Oh, thank God," you're not necessarily, you know, giving thanks to the Judeo-Christian God. Like I assume Japanese people do that too.
Yeah, I will have to get back to you.
What?
On that.
Oh, really, Usagi? Which God?
Yeah, right.
Is it Susano?
Yeah, probably not Susano.
Is it? Yeah,
Amaterasu. Amaterasu? Yeah.
Which one? Mamoru's like, huh. Well, did Chibi tell you anything about Crystal Tokyo? But Usagi says, no. Mamoru's like, okay, well, time to jog.
Peace out.
And he runs off. But as he does, he thinks, I'm sorry, Usako. And Usagi says, Momo-chan, I'll win back your love no matter what.
Yeah.
Later, she's more passionate than that. She's a little angry. Later, Momo's in a cafe. Lana Mamoru in this one.
Yes.
He's contemplating a water glass. I think it's water.
Yeah.
When a time portal opens up and Motoki steps out. Where's this guy been?
I know.
I've been working. He's been working a lot of doubles at Game Center Crown. It's got Mortal Kombat 2. You know how it is.
Is this the first time we've seen him in R?
I believe so.
That is crazy.
Motoki says, "You look pretty depressed." And Momoro says, "Hey, tell me. I think you'll know. How do I get a girl to hate me? What kind of a guy do girls hate?" I know. And this is weird. In the background of the scene, we see a guy and a redheaded girl having lunch. And we don't know what happens. We don't know if the guy says something or what, but the girl gets up and slaps his head sideways.
Mm-hmm.
Just then, a different redheaded girl, it's not real clear, comes up and offers Mamoru the triple-decker banana split he ordered.
Yeah.
She's the waitress.
Yeah.
And Mamoru blushes when she calls him by his name.
Uh-huh.
Love my way. Outside, all the girls, no redheads, are eating creamsicles in the shade. Ami is feeding hers to the cats. Minako asks Usagi if she found out anything about Crystal Tokyo from Chibiusa. The answer is no. She's too busy reading fairy tales. Mm-hmm. She hasn't asked this kid anything.
Mm-hmm.
Ray recaps for us that the future city Crystal Tokyo is being attacked by the Black Moon Clan from the Dark Moon. Got it? Good. Ami lets us know that Chibi's mom has been captured, and Jupiter says that Rubeus and the Ayakashi sisters want to destroy their world. Everybody get a line in the scene? We good?
Yeah, right.
Okay. Usagi is just sighing, though, and she asks why Mamoru is avoiding her. Luna and Artemis say, hey, we gotta gather information so we can stop the enemy. But Usagi's not feeling it. Just then, a motorcycle pulls up.
Mm-hmm.
It's Mamoru, and on the back of his bike is the waitress we saw in the previous scene.
Yep.
Usagi runs over and says, Mamo, who's she? She's like a relative or a cousin? Or... And Mamoru's like, get over it. Whatever. None of your business.
Yeah.
And the waitress is like, Mamo, who's this? And he says, it's just somebody I used to know. We're out of here. And drops appear on the ground in front of Usagi, but it's not her popsicle melting, it's her tears.
Yeah.
Every street you walk down, I leave two stains on the ground. As he drives away, Mamoru's face is set, but in his mind he sees himself kissing Usagi at their dream wedding, and once again, the ground exploding. It's so cool that he can remember his dreams. He thinks, I have to find out why I keep having that dream, and I gotta see a dentist. Until then, goodbye. And they drive off into a literal sunset.
Yeah.
That night at the Sukino house, we see Usagi knelt in front of the refrigerator. Luna hears noise from the kitchen and thinks it's a burglar, but she sees Usagi eating meat buns straight from the fridge. Yeah. And they don't taste better on a plate. They're delicious like this. She's in a bad way. She says tearfully, and probably with a full mouth, who cares if I get fat? I've been rejected. Mama has a new girlfriend. And just then, Chibi walks into the kitchen and hears this. And she turns to the camera like,
I know.
Everybody's cratering here. Chibi runs out of the house in her pajamas.
And it's like midnight at least. It's like freaking late.
And I guess she's running to Mamo's house thinking, it can't be true that she's got a girlfriend. He didn't even call. Where's my gun? And because she's a preoccupied little kid, she runs out in the road and nearly gets hit by a truck.
Yep.
But it's not one of those, usually like in this, it's like, headlights, and then like somebody swoops in. This is just a near miss, I guess.
Yeah, I know.
So it's good to know that in all those scenes in anime, when somebody's going to hit by a car, somebody grabs them. If nobody was there to grab them, the car would just miss them. As this happens, Luna P goes flying, and Chibi screams. Once again, a pillar of energy explodes up into the sky, like the end of a DC movie.
Mm-hmm.
Or a Marvel one, to be honest.
Yes.
Usagi is halfway into a cup of ramen with Naruto, but is immediately aware that Chibi is in danger.
Mm-hmm.
Quick cut to the UFO reveals that the Black Moon Clan is also aware of the outburst, and Rubeus sends Calaveras and Pets to Juban Park to kill the Wabbit.
Yes.
They appear in Juban Park and immediately begin chasing Chibi, who doesn't like Luna P a machine gun or something. I know she's a kid, but she knows what guns are. She was packing heat before.
I know.
Usagi runs in from the other direction, also in her PJs, but not for long, because she transforms into Sailor Moon, and I guess nobody saw.
I guess.
I've stopped tracking this.
Yeah.
Calaveras has scooped up Chibi. She has her by the throat, but Luna jumps in and goes to Claw City on Calaveras' arm, making her drop Chibi. Powder that!
Yeah.
Dab, dab, dab. Sailor Moon says, two grown women ganging up on one little girl is unforgivable. In the name of... But Calaveras cuts her off and says, we've been waiting for you. Akamuda, come out! And above Usagi, the droid Akamuda appears, chanting, "Dream, dream, dream."
Yes.
Akamuda hits Usagi with the whammy, and she falls asleep, saying, "I'm so full for midnight snacks. Good night."
I know.
Chibi is like, "Are you kidding?" But Pets waste no time in declaring that the rabbit must die. Before that can happen, though, the four sailors Senshi and Artemis bound onto the scene, surrounding the elder Ayakashi. Pets says, "Shoot!" And Calaveras says, "Well, yeah, we're outnumbered, so let's split." And they do, leaving Akamuda behind to deal with them. Akamuda does her thing to the rest of the girls. They all begin to slip into unconsciousness. But Rei says, "Oh, hell no!" It hits Akamuda with a prayer slip, which causes her to recoil and, like, turn into a swirling cloud.
Yeah, or it's weird. Yeah.
A gas miasma.
A gaseous thing. Droid. Yeah.
Sleepy cloud.
Yeah.
She says, "Sailor Moon will continue to dream and lose her energy and die." Mm-hmm. And then she just disappears into Usagi's mouth.
Yeah.
Unsanitary.
Yes.
She's like in her body.
Yeah.
The girls are freaked out by this. Me too. And everybody gets at least one anguished Sailor Moon in. They just go around the circle.
Yeah.
And then Makoto gets two. all the voice actors get paid today.
Yeah.
In Usagi's dream, she is like a chibi or like a baby version of herself. Yes. She's running on this long, undulating road. She's chasing an image of Mamoru that continually recedes from her. In the sky, two sinister eyes watch her futile progress, like an evil Dr. T.J. Eckelberg.
I don't know that reference.
She's chasing a green light.
Yeah.
In West Egg.
In West Egg?
The Great Gatsby. Read a book.
I've read The Great Gatsby.
Back in reality, the girls are really freaking out, and they're shaking her. They're slapping Usagi's face. And Ami helpfully tells us that if she doesn't wake up, she'll die. That seems to be the stakes here. In the dream, Usagi is now on a tiny raft in a wind-tossed sea, still chasing the ghostly figure of Mamoru. In reality, Rei pulls an airplane. "Let me handle this. Get a hold of yourself. No, let me try. Get a hold of yourself. Come on, come on." It's a very old movie. But all Usagi can say is, "Mamo." Luna, hearing this, remembers Usagi's late night pig out. And, oh, I don't know, everything she's said or done over the last 8 weeks.
I know.
And runs off. She's jumping across the rooftops. We cut to Mamoru's apartment, where he's asleep and not rushing to Usagi's rescue. Maybe it's only like physical danger that he can respond to.
Yeah, I guess he doesn't know that she's about to die.
He's like, maybe he's resisting it. He's like, "No, I won't transform. I won't.
I'm having a nightmare.
I have to be obstinate. Yeah. I'm Mr. Darcy." Luna jumps into his window, which is impressive because he's like 10 stories up.
Yeah.
I don't know how she got up there. And says, "It's terrible. You've got to wake Sailor Moon up. Be careful of the Forest of Briars. Oh, wait, is this metaphor too obvious?"
Yeah.
Mamoru wrestles with this because he remembers his picture of Usagi dying.
Yeah.
What about my dead picture?
Oh my god.
What will happen to the real Usagi?
Yeah.
Luna says, "You've loved each other since ancient times. Why are you being such an asshole?" We cut to the streets. Mamoru's on his motorcycle. Not in his pajamas, by the way. He bothered to change.
Yeah, he did.
He's burning rubber on the highway to save his erstwhile love. And he hits a sweet jump. And as we pan up, we see he's now tuxedo mask, cape streaming majestically behind him.
Yes.
And definitely worth at least one extra rose for this episode's rating. In her dream, Usagi is also on a wheeled vehicle. It's a tricycle. And she's just like,
"Meep, meep, meep." Yeah, that's a good point.
Still chasing Mamoru as Dr. T.J. Evilberg looks on. In the park, the girls have all but given up hope until Tuxedo Mask arrives and sees the state Usagi is in. He thinks about his prophetic dream and how he may have lost her, but he finally leans in to kiss her. In the dream, the evil eyes widen in fear as Usagi finally reaches Mamoru and embraces him. Back in reality, Usagi wakens to find the power of love has restored Sailor Moon's electrolytes or whatever.
Yeah.
She's awake. And just because this show is for kids, we see a tableau of the prince and Sleeping Beauty to just drive that home. Just auger that in.
Do you get it?
Do you get it? Philip is the name of the prince in the film Sleeping Beauty.
In the Disney version? Yes. Or, okay. I did not know that.
Oh, you mean like Maleficent? Yeah, Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah. But I just like, is that canon for like all stories of Sleeping Beauty?
Or there's Prince Charming. There's Prince...
Yeah, right.
Whatever. There's Prince Philip.
Yeah.
Which means love.
Oh.
Chibi... Yeah, I don't know. Okay. Chibi says, "What, the fairy tale came true? Okay, we get it, show. We got it."
I know.
Akimuta is pissed. She draws the horn from her head, and it's a sword
yeah.
or a knife, and she slashes at Tuxedo Mask, who falls away clutching his arm. Sailor Moon says, "Girls always dream about pursuing the ones they love, and I won't forgive you for taking advantage of it."
Mm-hmm.
She gives Akimuta the MPH, and the droid is no more.
Yes.
Tuxedo Mask says, "You were as magnificent as ever, but I do not love you."
Yeah.
The red string of fate that has bound us has been severed.
Yeah.
To illustrate, he crushes a rose in his fist, and the petals blow away slowly as he tears off on his sweet ride.
I know.
"Sorry, honey. I'm a rambler."
Yeah.
"Gotta roll." Later, Mamoru gazes into the harbor, saying, "Usako, I'm sorry." And this time, it's his tears, not popsicle, falling on his helmet.
Yep.
We cut to the next day in a cafe, and just to wrap this part up, Usagi learns that the redheaded girl, the second one,
yes,
is Unizuki Furuhata, Motoki's younger sister.
Yes.
Which is weird. She says, "Yeah, you gave me a ride the other day to my date with my boyfriend. Mm-hmm. I am a girl, and I have a boyfriend." And Usagi thinks, "Lucky, she has a boyfriend. I'm going to drink this melon soda.
Yep.
But why is Mamoru still avoiding me? Well, I'll solve that mystery and get his love back. I'm going to do it."
Yep.
Ma'am, this is a maid cafe. It's weird to, like, it's a little sad.
What is?
Well, I just don't, I mean, like, Mamoru's, you almost get the idea that he must be destined for Usagi, because otherwise, he's not that into girls. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's, yeah, sure, he goes out with Rei.
Right.
Sure, many of the female villains, like, fall in love with him,
mm-hmm.
but he's reading books.
Yeah.
He's driving a sweet cycle around.
Yeah.
He's just not that into girls. And then, like, he's like, "Man, I need a decoy. I need a ringer.
Yeah.
This is a rom-com situation here."
Right.
My friend's younger sister.
She's cute.
That's no. so weak.
I know.
That's so...
Which at this point,
just get a date.
I know. Which at this point, Usagi and everybody, they don't know who she is.
No, because she's just been created out of whole cloth for this episode. But like, that's just so...
She'll come back.
That's spoiler. That's just amateur style. You think you could like actually find or have like a friend, a lady friend, look into his little black book or something like that. It's just sort of like, sometimes you have to do stuff like this. I remember one time I went to a bar for New Year's with my sister and my girlfriend at the time. And I remember that my sister was saying like, "Okay, like if anybody comes up to me, you know, and I give you the high sign, you're my boyfriend."
Your sister said that to you?
Yeah. She's like, "I don't want anybody to mess with me. I don't want anybody to like, you know, to try to chat me up. So, you know, if anything happens, you just come and, hey, what's going on?" And then like, that'll be the end of that.
Did that happen?
But that was a thing of necessity. The fact that Mamoru like can't just ask a friend out or like, he's like, "Oh, thank God Motoki just stumbled into this show.
Thank God."
You have a sister who works in this cafe, don't you?
My best friend, my only friend, has a sister.
And you say, like, "But that's manipulative." It's manipulative to use your best friend's sister for this kind of thing, too. She didn't know what she was getting into when she gets on the bike. What if Usagi, like, shows up at her house with a blackjack? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's... you are involved. This person that you have picked is involved, no matter how you wanted to involve them.
No, that's true. That's absolutely true. And she's completely innocent in this, so...
It's kind of a nerd move.
He's kind of a nerd. Yes, he's very into books and very into motorcycles.
That is not true. Is Mr. Darcy a nerd? Oh. Whoa.
What would he be a nerd of? You can just be a nerd. I mean, he was very much like to himself, and he didn't really like, he kept to himself, but he didn't really know how to like interact with people.
I think
that
we're learning
either.
More about you than about Mr. Darcy.
Here. What are you talking about?
You are reluctant to apply the label of nerd to Mr. Darcy.
He might be a nerd. That's what I'm exploring right now.
No one ever really dies. That kind of nerd.
I don't know.
The
what
Neptunes.
That
don't worry about it.
Okay.
What do you want to say about this episode?
Okay. So the picture frame breaking thing. Like, so what bothered me about that, so it breaks and she hunches over, which is horrifying and awful, but I swear, like, the glass is still broken. And even when he picks it up later, when Luna's there.
He crushed it. He was gripping it so tight.
Is that what happened?
Just thinking about stuff.
It's just.
Thinking about his chick.
It's weird.
It is weird.
And I just want to shake him. I just want to shake him in this episode, but like this entire arc of this like, oh, Usako, and I'm crying. And it's like, if you would just talk to her or even talk to Motoki about this, because Motoki's like, what's up, Mamo? You seem like, well, you
what's
didn't call
up, him. Mama?
No, I said Mamo, but he probably wouldn't call him Mamo.
Hey,
but
Mama.
What's up, Mamoru? Seems like you're kind of down. Like, he senses he's depressed.
Don't get this video game guy involved. It doesn't matter. He should tell Luna is who he should tell.
I was thinking that,
if
too.
If this wasn't a children's show, he would tell Luna off screen. Then in a couple episodes, there would be some kind of payoff where Luna would have this information about this new wrinkle in this. Where, because Luna's never really, I don't think Luna feels either way about Mamoru. I think if he went away, Usagi could study her powers more and be a better guardian. But she's just like, yeah, whatever. But then like when we see the depth of Luna's concern. Yes. About their connection and their relationship in this.
Which is one of my favorite parts of this episode.
Right. And then, of course, we know that they've been, you know, they all were together in the Silver Kingdom, Crystal Kingdom.
The
looking good so far. The Moon Kingdom.
Yeah, the Moon Kingdom.
Long, long ago. Mm-hmm. But Luna's practical. And I think maybe Luna's like, yeah, I mean, that'll work itself out. Like, she's a 14-year-old now that I've got to, like, keep alive and not get killed by monsters.
Right.
But, like, we see in this episode that she does really understand that they have this connection and that they should be in love.
Yeah.
And so if he told her, like, okay, but I have it on good authority, a guy in my dreams, that she'll die.
Right.
She'll look back over her shoulder and then she'll blow up if we stay together. And then now Luna could take this information and be like, okay. Maybe in the future, like, she's like, I'm going to go talk to Mama. Ooh, let's go do something else, Usagi. Maybe she's trying to, like...
Right. That would be good.
But that's a little, we don't really track things episode to episode like that.
Let me ask you this.
Okay.
Any thoughts as to who the voice in the dream could be?
I don't know. I didn't take the time to play it back against creepy wise guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it sounds like creepy wise guy's voice.
Okay.
Because the best thing to do would be, If they're obviously you're trying to take over the crystal points to get the energy that's defending Crystal Tokyo, but if the connection of these two heroes is, you know, what gives us, you know, engenders the future of Crystal Tokyo, if we can keep them apart without, they're both powerful superheroes, we can't kill them, then maybe we can subtly influence them to like to stay apart, and if they never get together, then they fade out of the photograph.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask.
Or just slump over in the photograph.
Right, exactly.
But if Marty looks at the photograph, he's like, my sister and my brother, they're both on the ground. They just fell over.
It's so weird. I don't understand what this means.
Marty. Backtracking is back for an all-new season. Hi, I'm Caliban.
And I'm Gooey Fame.
And we'd like to introduce you to Backtracking, the podcast that explores the real-world inspirations behind your favorite episodes of Star Trek.
From historical events to classical literature to blockbuster films, we go where no pod has gone before to seek out the origins of classic Trek tales.
Did you know, Gooey, that the TNG episode Too Short a Season was an allegory for the Iran-Contra affair?
Yeah, only sweatier. Did you know that the Enterprise episode Regeneration was an homage to the John Carpenter film The Thing?
Archer and T'Pol freezing to death over a bottle of whiskey would have been a controversial ending.
As a dog lover, Archer would not like The Thing, I'm guessing.
Oh my god, movie night is canceled. Join us every other Thursday for a journey back to the beginnings of the Trek universe.
Backtracking is available wherever you get your podcasts.
No, Porthos!
For filmmaker Kyoro Kuromiru are curiously looking around when we talk about elements of Japanese culture within the episode, today we are going to look at the history of motorcycles in Japan.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Cal is excited about this. So we see...
Yeah, two-stroke, one-stroke.
Yeah, right.
How many strokes you got? I don't know.
I really don't know.
I've never been allowed to have a motorcycle.
Yeah. Why is that?
Because girls are worried that you'll die on a motorcycle.
They're dangerous.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's what like helmets are for. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've been this close to buying a motorcycle half a dozen times in my life.
Oh, yeah.
And I always get the nope.
Can't. No. No dice.
Squashed.
At least you're squashed before you buy it and not after you buy it. We see one of the coolest transformations ever in this episode. Mamoru transforms into Tuxedo Mask while doing a jump on his motorcycle.
Yeah, so. I guess he doesn't have to. He probably doesn't have like a 90-second transformation sequence because that'd be a long. The bike is just floating in the air for a minute.
I think we've seen like a transformation like once, but it isn't
yes, when they're in Starlight Tower and he transforms. Yeah. When they both learn that
who they are. Yeah, exactly. But it's not as long as... any of the girls.
No, it has to be as long as a jump that was not done with anything in the road.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Cars are fun, and motorcycles too.
In 1896, the first motorcycle made its debut in Japan. It was a Hildebrand and Wolfmuller, which was the first production motorcycle in Germany, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
And it was imported by Shinsuke Jomanji, who was a representative of the Japanese House of Representatives. He demonstrated how to ride the bike in front of the Hibiya Hotel in Tokyo. And in 1901, a Thomas motorcycle and tricycle were imported to Japan. The Thomas is considered to be the first production motorcycle in the U.S. The motorcycle was ridden around Tokyo a lot and created a lot of buzz with the press.
Whoa. Wow.
Yeah, a lot of people right. Said. Exactly. In 1908, Narazo Shimazu established the Motor Research Institute at the age of 20. At the institute, he built and designed the first two-stroke engine in Japan with a 400cc capacity.
Yeah.
In 1909, he produced his first four-stroke engine as well as a motorcycle frame to go with it. This is generally thought to be the first motorcycle made in Japan. So, again, 1909.
We've never really talked about cars in Japan, have we?
Not really.
I was going to say... where do you get the gasoline from?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's around, I guess.
There's not a Mobil on the corner. Like, yeah. You're in a almost pre-industrial at this point society. So it's like, where do you get the petrol?
It must have been around.
Worth
I don't
its
really...
weight in gold, probably.
Yeah, right. I don't... we'll get into it a little bit, but motor vehicles, it kind of took a little while for them to get to be super popular. And
sure.
In Japan.
Sure. Yeah, well, the streets weren't wide enough, probably.
Well, that's part of it. Shimazu produced more than 20 of his NS motorcycles, and NS stood for his initials, at Nihon Motorcycle Company, NMC, and later, starting in 1926, produced more than 700 Aero First motorcycles, a 250cc side valve single cylinder bike. At Japan Motors Manufacturing.
That's a kiddie bike.
In 1909, Japanese government began to officially allow commercial import of foreign motorcycles, which created a market for businesses selling imported machines, as well as domestic designs incorporating foreign components.
Interesting.
Yes. So, there's a lot of stuff of, there's a lot of history of this early on, and in 1913, Miata, which originally was a manufacturer of, I thought this was interesting, of guns for the Imperial Japanese Army and bicycles. They are still a manufacturer of bicycles, actually, still producing in Japan, produced the first all-Japanese motorcycle under the Asahi name, based on a British Triumph design, which a Triumph is another bike. It's British. Okay. All right. Preaching to the choir here. Well, I learned that. And then I think
we'll never have one. Sorry, go ahead.
And I think we've mentioned before, Asahi is a popular
yeah, they make dog food. They make everything.
It means morning. So it's everywhere.
Asahi's like the Acme of Japan.
Yeah, it's everywhere. So, but that's okay. However, at the time, motor vehicles were a luxury item, and imported motorcycles were seen as fashionable and desirable over locally made machines. And the Asahi sold fewer than 40 units before production was discontinued in 1916.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Foreign cars, eh?
Yeah.
They learned that lesson before they used that lesson.
Mm-hmm.
speaking of Miatas.
Yeah, right. And then, so we'll get into a little bit of about the roads here. So the popularity of the motorcycle was growing in Japan at this time. It should be noted that the urban roads in particular were awful, and therefore there was no unified highway code at the time.
Hmm.
Roads in cities tended to be worse than those in the country, as Japanese urban centers were intentionally designed in a non-uniform patchwork quilt pattern during the feudal period to hinder the progression of invading troops. This is a very common thing, and if you go to a Japanese also ghosts. Yeah, well,
right, the bridge. When you build the bridge with the right
with
angle in it.
With the right angle in it, right.
Like, God, I don't do, I
they
can't
don't
turn.
Do right angles, yeah. So, oh, I foiled again. there's a lot of castles in Japan that, you know, you can still visit and are tourist sites. They're protected. I went to the place where I studied in Japan was a castle town. And the steeps are step and shallow on purpose, so it's harder to invade.
Right.
So there's lots of things like that. A lack of road signs as well as street names merged with ill road repair made the progression to motor vehicles challenging. Japan had never relied on horses and carts for general movement of goods during the feudal period, and most travel was on foot.
That's interesting that they weren't even ready with carriages and things like that.
No, they weren't. It's really interesting because they just didn't, for whatever reason, it was just like, well, I can just go here with my
human power.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And also it's interesting to note that during the Meiji period, which was 1868 to 1912, the government actually decided to prioritize the rail and sea network over the roads.
Sure.
And I did look a little bit into this. This will probably be something for another time, but during the Meiji period, they were looking for like, okay, well, we want to build a railroad. How do we do that? And they were kind of like looking at other countries and how they did that and actually partnered with Britain on building, the train system.
Ah, yes.
And so Britain suggested, oh, well, your trains should, go on the left-hand side of each other. So it's posited that it's partially because Britain helped them with their train systems that's why they drive on the left-hand side of the road.
Right.
But it also should be noted that samurais held their swords, I believe it was on the left-hand side as well.
So did the Romans.
So if you passed each other on the left-hand side, then it was easier to draw your sword.
Right.
Right. So because of samurai and the British helping with the railroads, they drive on the left-hand side. That's supposedly why it is anyways. In 1913, the first motorcycle race was held in Japan at the Hanshin Race Course, a dirt horse racing track in Nishinomiya, Japan, which is a small city between Kobe and Osaka. Fun fact, Nishinomiya is one of the first places I've ever been in Japan.
Huh.
It's my high school's sister school, Kobe College, is in Nishinomiya. It's slightly closer to Kobe, but it's kind of right in between.
I'm feeling a real Downton Abbey, rip-roaring, racing type thing here, like dirt track. They put the goggles and the scarves on.
Oh, I'm sure there were goggles and scarves. Abso-freaking-lutely.
Everybody was just so like, oh, it goes real fast. Let's get in it and smash them together.
Yeah, pretty much.
Just a bunch of crazy people.
I know. I mean, this is like 1913.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And around 30,000 people came to watch the race, which at the time was a record for any kind of racing in Japan, in attendance. Racing became...
Yeah, well, it was a foot race before.
Well, I suppose you're right. Yeah. Racing became more commonplace at venues across Japan, and professional riders appeared, such as Kawamura Kazuo, who we will get to this in a minute, later worked at Harley-Davidson Japan. Oh. And Kenzo Tada, who in 1930 was the first Japanese rider to compete at the Isle of Man TT, which stands for Tourist Trophy, and is this the Isle of Man TT is it's a motorcycle race. It's very, very fast, still going on today. I think it was started in the early 1900s. And it is frequently called one of the most dangerous racing events in the world. And he participated in that abroad. The machine was called a Velocette KTT. And he, you know, traveled by ship and train to get there. Like, it took a long time because, you know, Isle of Man is it's Great Britain.
Right.
So it took a long time.
Can't ride a motorcycle there.
No, you can't. By 1919, largely to the demand of the Japanese military, a unified highway code was organized, driving on the left-hand side, and civilian contractors were hired to enhance bridges and roads, while the military was permitted to finance vehicle manufacturing. Harley-Davidson's second global export market in the 1920s was Japan, Australia being the first. And so it was very, very popular over there. And Indian motorcycles sold just about a lot of as well, around 1,000 a year, including a bike to the prince, later Emperor Hirohito. Huh. Who enjoyed riding an Indian chief with a sidecar.
Sure.
So at this time, basically, more and more brands were being imported into Japan from all over the world, largely Europe. But again, Harley-Davidson was very popular. BMW was popular as well. AJS, Matchless, just a bunch of different kinds of motorcycles. Motorcycle clubs started to appear in Japan, some of which did not allow riders to go out on their bikes alone due to the awful state of the roads.
Right.
That is how bad the roads were.
Where's your buddy? Remember the buddy system.
Yeah, exactly. In 1923, a large earthquake damaged a great portion of Tokyo, which, you know, injured many people and many lost their lives. And the difficult street system plus the lack of motorized emergency vehicles meant big alterations for the Japanese vehicle industry and the streets they utilized. Hmm. Tokyo was rebuilt with a road system that made more sense for vehicles. and in 1924, the number of vehicles doubled, and there was an emphasis across Japan to have more modernized road system. To further encourage the developing Japanese vehicle industry, in 1925, import tariffs were imposed on foreign vehicles,
sure,
which led many American manufacturers in the 1920s, such as Ford, General Motors, Chrysler, and Harley-Davidson, to set up factories in Japan. I want to shift gears to talk about the to talk about the Japanese motorcycle manufacturers that are known today as the Big Four, because they are very, very influential.
Big four-stroke engine.
Yeah. And they are Honda, Kawasaki, Suzuki, and Yamaha. Mm-hmm. Honda is the largest motorcycle manufacturer in Japan and has been since it started its production of motorcycles in 1955. Although they were a company before that, and they were doing motorized bikes before they did motorcycles. Uh-huh. At its peak in 1982, Honda manufactured almost 3 million motorcycles annually. By 2006, this figure had reduced to around 550,000, but was still higher than its other three domestic competitors.
Wow.
It's huge. Japanese motorcycles became internationally known in the 1960s when they started competing in global races first at the Isle of Man TT and later the MotoGP. These bikes caught the world's attention because not only did they perform well, they won. Just as a side note, I thought this was kind of interesting. During the 60s, Honda kind of made a name for itself in the U.S. with a very popular ad campaign. So Gray, they went to the agency Gray Advertising, and the slogan was, "You meet the nicest people on a Honda."
That sounds like Mad Men.
Right?
Yeah.
It reminds me of Don Draper. Was this on Mad Men?
Yeah.
This was an episode of Mad Men.
It was like a season long thing, I think, where they were trying to get the Honda contract.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, basically in contrast to the negative stereotype of motorcyclists in America being tough rebels, you know, who maybe they're not the nice
stereotype.
Yeah, exactly. It's a stereotype. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, it's a stereotype.
But, the campaign was hugely successful, and the ad ran for 3 years, and by the end of 1963 alone, Honda had sold 90,000 motorcycles.
Wow.
So,
what do we think about when we think about motorcycles?
Exactly. Japanese motorcycles' popularity solidified with what would become known as the Universal Japanese Motorcycle, or UJM. Universal Japanese Motorcycle is a U.S. motorcycling media term for a general purpose style of Japanese standard motorcycle that revolutionized the industry and made motorcycling in America more accessible during the 1970s and 1980s. Mm-hmm. By around 1990, its popularity began to wane as the market fragmented and became more specialized designs. A defining example is the Honda CB750, which was introduced in 1969 with an engine based on technology Honda had developed in the Grand Prix racing. In Grand Prix racing, not the Grand Prix racing. It was the first production bike with disc brakes. Compared to British and American models that then dominated the market, it had better performance and reliability, was better equipped, and was also more inexpensive than those bikes. It revolutionized the industry both in America and abroad, and sales in America immediately overtook the big bikes from established brands like BSA and Triumph. Mm. The CB750's first Japanese competitor was the Kawasaki Z1 in 1972.
Yeah.
It was followed in 76 by the Suzuki GS750 and by the Yamaha X711 in 1978. These manufacturers all produce smaller versions of the same UJM formula, including many other versions. And by 1979, Harley-Davidson's bike sales were down 90%.
Yeah.
So I guess I just want to mention, too, that like we saw, at least, you know, we're going to continue to see, but I remember with the Ferris wheels, just like this idea of friendly competition.
Sure.
And these other jet, we have to do a little bit better. Well, scrap this idea. We gotta make ours better.
Right.
And, you know, and kind of
five strokes.
We edge each other on. Yeah, exactly. The UJM was a general-purpose road bike, and the style went into decline in the 1980s and early 1990s with the segmentation of the market and the development of kind of more niche products that were like sport, touring, kind of specialty bikes. Honda sold about 400,000 CB750s, and the model run ended in 2003 with a Nighthawk. Mm. And I do want to mention in 2019, Honda, Yamaha, Kawasaki, and Suzuki announced that they will start a partnership to research, design, and produce electronic bikes or e-bikes. The partnership aims to, quote, standardize the technology and ensure batteries work across the different brands.
Sure.
So they're actually working together.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Right.
Yeah. So,
because why not? It helps everybody.
It does help everybody.
I'm going to make a motorcycle that you can't fix. It's glued together.
I know, right?
And it only uses one kind of battery. Yeah. Standardized parts.
Right? That's exactly what they're trying to do.
Right.
So, you know, this is just, of course, scratching the surface. But, you know, Japan, they are like, oh, motorcycles, huh? I think we could do that. And, you know.
Yeah.
They figure out a way, like, how do we do that the best?
You know? It always fascinates me because they're in a great example of an ancient, you know, long-running society who has done things a certain way, and then they were almost like a time capapsule. They were almost, I'm not trying to belittle them. I'm just,
no, I know exactly what you're talking about.
About their development in the 20th century.
But they were a closed country for many years.
Yeah. So it's just like it's this weird, like, sociologist experiment to, like, see, like, okay, so some things they had to adopt just to deal with the general world economy and all these other things. But, like, what did they think was cool? What did they want to get? Ferris wheels. Okay, interesting.
I know.
And apparently, like, they're like, motorcycles. Okay,
motorcycles are
check
cool.
Check that out. Yeah. What if we made them so good that Harley Davidson was like, these guys are up our ass?
I know.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So anyway, yeah, jump on your bike, grab your mask, your common.
Yeah, and right.
A common rider. And if you feel fancy, tuxedo common rider.
Maybe throw a rose.
Yeah. Stop by Bachman's.
Yeah. Itadakimasu with Usagi. What did Usagi eat in this episode? There's a lot of food in this episode. Mamoru stares into a glass of ice water looking for answers to his problems.
Oh, H2O. You never let me down.
A server who we later find out is Unazuki Furuhata, Motoki's younger sister, brings Mamoru an ice cream parfait.
Yes.
And then, of course, the Senshi try to beat the heat by eating what looks like a creamy vanilla popsicle.
Yeah. Jello pudding pop, maybe.
Yeah, right. If you're fancy. And Mercury gave hers to the cats to fight over?
They're not gonna.
They're fighting over it. Luna and Artemis are usually so dignified.
Yeah,
cats. I know, but I was like, what? And then one of our biggest clues that Usagi is not doing well is that she's letting her ice cream melt.
She's not eating that.
She's not interested. Late at night, we see Usagi sitting in front of the fridge, taking out multiple things, including a 2-liter bottle of soda, a plate of Nikuman, a bowl of fruit, just surrounded as food as she sadly nibbles on the Nikuman. And then in the next scene, Usagi is eating a cup of instant noodles with a Naruto or Naruto Maki fish cake on it. So Naruto is, or Naruto Maki is a type of, kamaboko or cured fish, surimi.
Right.
Each cloud shaped slice of Naruto has a pink or red spiral pattern, which is meant to resemble the Naruto whirlpools in the Naruto Strait between Awaji Island and, Shikoku in Japan.
How many Japanese people know that? Do they just know that?
It's actually pretty well known. Well, I don't know if they know that that's where. I think that's like the only other like Naruto area. So I think they might know that. Okay. Yeah. The word is also used as a slang term for the et sign, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes total sense. I finally know where we are. Okay. Yeah, that's absolutely.
So going back to the Naruto whirlpools, during a spring tide, the speed of the water may reach 20 kilometers an hour or 12 miles per hour, creating vortexes up to 20 meters or 66 feet in diameter. Oh. So they are visible boats pass by and you see the whirlpools. Huh. Like, I've seen pictures of it. Right. Sure. I know. Exactly. I don't know exactly how that came into play. Cool design, I guess. Naruto Maki.
I want to email somebody.
I know. Yeah, right. And email them some fish. Naruto Maki is a steamed fish cake made by, pureed, deboned white fish, egg whites, salt, sugar, mirin, and a bit of food coloring. And it is a little bit like it's, so after it's like pureed and it's like steamed, that you like separate them into two different, and you color the one, and then there's like this special like mold you put it into. Anyways, Naruto is a common topping on Japanese noodles such as Tokyo style ramen. In some regions of Japan, it is also used as an ingredient of oden or nimono. And yes, this is what the character Naruto is most likely named after. There is a swirl or whirlpool engraved on his headband, although so he's probably named after the strait. It's not clear if it's the whirlpool or the fish cake. And the creator of Naruto, Masashi Kishimoto, has not commented on that, but supposedly he initially wanted to create a manga one-shot where Naruto was a chef. This version never was printed, so many fans have speculated that his name is after the Naruto Maki because of this.
Okay. What about Boruto?
Boruto? I have no idea.
We'll do that next time.
Okay. and then at the end of the episode, Usagi is drinking a cream soda, which we've talked about before, which is melon soda with a scoop of vanilla ice cream in it.
I want to go back to Pudding Pops for a second. What happened to Pudding Pops? Kids today will never know the joy of a Pudding Pop. When I was a kid, we would like stab each other for Pudding Pops. They were like, that was the currency of childhood. You get that Pudding Pop. You have no feelings about Pudding Pops, I can tell.
I don't really remember eating Pudding Pops.
That really locates me in time.
I remember eating like fudgesicles and like creamsicles, which I define as being vanilla ice cream with like the orange on the outside.
Yeah.
But I don't really remember eating Pudding Pops. I remember eating pudding.
Right. Yeah, just vanilla or chocolate. You know, it's creamy, it's frozen, it's delicious. And I don't know what even happened to them.
Okay. All right. Maybe that's what they were eating.
Time to bring them back.
Yeah. Bring them back. Villain gauge, where you rate a baddie 1 to 5 dark stars, 5 being the most wicked. The droid in this episode is Akumuda. And her name, Akumu, means nightmare in Japanese.
Ah.
And da is the informal conjugation of the Japanese kapala des, meaning to be or it is. And a Japanese kapala is used to grammatically link a subject and a predicate. So Akumuda means to be or it is a nightmare. So
it's a nightmare.
She's right. She's basically a living nightmare is what I interpret that as.
She is the nightmare.
Yeah, exactly.
She's your nightmare.
Yes. And her character design, she has light blue skin, short dark blue hair, green eyes, and most disturbingly, an off-white horn on her forehead, which she pulls out and is a sword.
It's neat.
Yeah, it's neat, but I kind of wonder how it works. I'm reminded of Avogadro's banana sword, but this is more disturbing.
A little bit, little bit.
When that was only a couple episodes ago. This goes into her brain. Where does it go?
She's a robot.
Yeah,
your brain could be in her butt. You don't know.
Yeah, well, I suppose.
I was reminded of the old, old wooden ship. The old idea of there being two gates in dreams, a gate of horn and a gate of ivory. And true dreams come from the gate of horn, and false dreams come from the gate of ivory.
Never heard this before. This is interesting.
And I mean, obviously, like horn literally in English just means a horn. Mm-hmm. It's like a corn. Like corn to us means like corn, but that's maize, and corn just means a grain. You know, it could mean that something else, wheat or something else in outside of America.
Okay.
So I don't think that horn necessarily means it's a horn. I didn't see if it was ivory or not, but this comes from the Odyssey. And it's actually, it's a Greek pun. It's a play on words that does not make it to English because the word for horn in Greek means fulfill, and the word for ivory means like deceive. And so it's like this play on words that's sort of like persisted in lore. It was used recently in Sandman, in the Dreaming, like there's a gate of horn and a gate of ivory. So I was thinking, like, wow, okay. if you could nail it down that her horn was, you know, ivory, then like this is a false dream that they're giving to obviously Sailor Moon, but also maybe to Mamoru, the idea of this, there won't be misfortune. You know, we're trying to deceive you.
I mean, it's possible. They don't say.
What do you think of that?
I think that's interesting. I can't get a sticker
every time I bring a fun little fact like that.
Oh, why not? I think you could.
We can't cheat ourselves with the stickers.
Oh, okay. All right.
Oh, he seems so disappointed.
I was like, somebody's going to get a sticker. It's not going to be me. And then for her outfit, she's wearing a long sleeve black unitard with a slight turtleneck, a dark green bikini or swimsuit that looks like it's a bikini anyways, over it. And she also has dark green armbands on each arm, her black moon jewel on her chest, which is also dark green boots, and long dangly gold earrings.
She looks like a German expressionist dancer, like a modern dancer.
Yeah, it's like a dancer deconstructed. Like we took all the frills out. I don't know.
Well, just like putting on like a black unitard or something like that.
Yeah.
And you're like,
well, the weird thing. This is things.
A bird in flight.
Yeah.
Now is the time on Schrockets when we dance. Like that.
I could see that.
Okay.
She does do that kind of weird arm thing when she first appears.
Yeah, she does.
So, and then, of course, she says, dream, 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 and then sleep, sleep, fall asleep. A whole bunch. And so now I'm ready to rate her already.
Oh, okay. She doesn't say Akamuda.
No, she
Akamuda,
doesn't.
Akamuda, your nightmare.
Oh, she does say Sailor Moon will continue to dream, and in her dream, she will use up all her energy and die, which Whoa. Is pretty terrifying.
Okay.
All right.
Sometimes people lose their energy and they're just sort of like a little wiped out, but this is death.
This is death.
This is the real thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you die in your dream, you die for real.
Yes, exactly. See, she could have said that. So I think that her horn/sword is pretty disturbing, and the fact that she is able to make Sailor Moon dream and she would have died if Tuxedo Mask hadn't showed up, that's impressive. But if you have a droid who is supposed to be the living embodiment of a nightmare, she just was not all that scary, and the character design is almost too simplistic, in my opinion. Because of what she's supposed to be, I'm going to give her a 3 out of 5 dark stars.
She always goes, it's like, I got to get you ready for bad news. It's only going to be a 3 out of 5, which is like 3, and that's like more than half of the way to being good. I'm feeling generous. I'm going to give her a 3. I'm picking up what she's putting down.
Yeah.
I don't see what I did there.
After you said that, like, I'm getting people ready for bad news, hey, and it's three you're
generous.
Like, I'm going to be generous. I'm going to give her a 3. So
I'm picking up what she's putting down. I hate these, like, monochromatic.
Right.
I'd rather go – because it's about couture and fashion. I'd rather go more Rococo than Spartan.
Yes.
But I think it works for what I was talking about, the sort of German expressionist dancer type thing. She's got a pretty strong power. Mm-hmm. You go to sleep and you die, and then you have like weird dreams until you die.
Yeah.
And I like their possibly unintended the Great Gatsby reference. So yeah, I'm down with Akamuda.
Okay.
I'll do 3.
All right.
3 good. Dark stars.
For Subbu or Dubbu, where we talk about the most interesting differences between the sub or the dub, Motoki's sister, Unazuki, is named Lizzie in the dub. Yeah, I know.
They always work so hard in these names.
I know, right? the droid Akamuda is named Hypnotica in the deke dub.
Solid.
In the dub, Hypnotica tried to put the Senshi to sleep while singing to the tune of Brahms' Lullaby.
Okay, that's...
Do you like to demonstrate what that sounds like?
That's sweaty.
Yeah. She also talked more in the dub and attempts to hypnotize the Senshi instead of repeatedly saying dream or sleep to put them to sleep.
What'd you say?
I don't have any reference for that.
You're getting very sleepy.
Yeah, probably. In the dub after the lullaby, Sailor Mars insulted Hypnotica's singing ability. And in the dub, Sailor Moon's dream and Sailor Mars slapping her were both cut.
The dream?
Whole dream. Hold on.
Okay.
However, the slap was seen in the preview of the episode. So I read conflicting things about the dream. That it was just the droid's eyes that were cut, like her being in the dream was cut. And then I read something else that the dreams were cut completely. So I don't know.
Oh.
This is the first appearance of Motoki's sister, Unazuki, in the anime. She's also a character in the manga. Akumura is the last droid sent by the Ayakashi sisters. I find that surprising.
Okay, well, I know we talked about it. It's okay for you to... Okay, all right. I asked for it and I got it. So, all right. It's fine.
Okay.
Feels like a spoiler. Like there were not going to be any more droids, but that's fine. No, that's what we set up. We established that previously. It's not like I ever felt like the droids are really all hot crap. So that's good.
In the last scene of this episode where
goodbye, droids.
Okay, all right. In the last scene of this episode where we see Mamoru, where he's crying onto his motorcycle helmet, in the background there
the manliest way to cry.
Yeah. In the background there is a billboard that says SR-Moon. So Sailor Moon R.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Now we're up to where we rate the episode. So this episode gets to me when Luna finally puts together how incredibly depressed Usagi is and that Mamoru is the only one who could save her and just runs to get him without sharing with anyone her plans. And the transformation into Tuxedo Mask as his motorcycle jumps into the air is amazing. But even though I really feel Usagi's distress and her depression, I feel like this is kind of a filler episode. Not a lot of things happen to advance the plot. And there's a lot of people saying her name and just we're stretching it out. So I'm going to give this episode 3 out of 5 roses.
Oh, boy. It's just the naked padding that they've got in this.
I guess I don't like to give episodes.
They're just wasting time. Three stars.
But yeah, I could be harsher.
Is statistically insignificant. I mean, it's literally average. So this will just go into the pile with all the other 3 stars, and no one will ever know that you were slightly disappointed. That seems like a 2.
No. Okay.
I give it a 3. just because, like I said, the motorcycle stuff alone and just getting into doing a Mamoru episode or at least a majority Mamoru episode. The motorcycle jump, all these things save it. Them going back to the fairy tale well.
Yeah.
When Snow White is not that far in our side mirror, motorcycle.
See you there.
It's a little like, all right. And then if it's all for Chibi's benefit, she's barely in the episode.
And she doesn't care.
No, she doesn't care at the beginning. And she's always learning like these little lessons. So she doesn't care at the beginning. And she shows up at the end or just like gets a line at the end.
Yeah.
Just to reiterate that she gets the lesson.
Right.
But it doesn't tie back into the larger sphere of, you know, who these people are. And she's who's read her the story before. And you know what I mean? Like nobody's getting closer to.
Right.
Luna has a huge realization, but nobody else is. We're all just marking time otherwise. So 3 is very generous from me, but I am going to give it a 3.
Yeah. If Tuxedo Mask had been like, I have to talk to you, and they have a scene off screen and we see it like next episode or something, you know, if we knew that like maybe they're going to get closer or like we can work on this together or something.
This seems like a real jumping off point to something else, especially because the droids are gone. But I'm sure we'll pick up the ball. This is another the very top. You know, when you're going up a roller coaster, tick 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 tick. Oh, the anticipation. Oh, tick tick tick, and then you get to the very top, and nothing's happening.
Yeah.
And then the plunge.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a plunge on the other side of this. Mm-hmm. But this was kind of like, ah, oh, here's one more. We got Fairy Tales? Sleeping Beauty. I've got Sleeping Beauty. So I'll do that. Sure. So it's like, it's fine. There have been worse sort of padding episodes.
Yes. I agree.
This was touching in parts, crying on your helmet. You know, yeah, it's good stuff. But yeah, we'll give it 3 and then we'll say no more.
All right. My English title for this episode is Mamoru's Despair. No more Usako.
No more Usako.
Yeah.
Like that. My deke title for this is Uneasy Rider.
Oh, that's good.
That is a sticker.
Oh, okay. All right. Now we get a sticker because Cal.
It's completely arbitrary. That's
right. It's arbitrary sticker time. What'd you get?
Oh, you're going to be so jealous. I got a full length Sailor Jupiter.
Oh, I am
Makoto
so jealous.
Makoto Kino.
Yeah. Really cute.
Giving us the sass.
Yeah.
And a mile of legs.
Mm-hmm. Like they all have. But I guess she has a couple inches on them. Yeah. Next episode, we're talking about episode number 70. Can you believe it? Number 70.
Not as nice.
No.
Sorry, go ahead.
I no hono no taiketsu. Mazu tai koan in Japanese. Battle of the Flames of Love, Mars versus Koan, the English translation, and the English title, Enemies No More.
Huh. Interesting. No more droids.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a one-on-one battle here, which I've seen those Burning Mandalas. I knew I was going to win this one. Mm-hmm. And then Enemies No More. Well, a lot to think about. I got a lot to think about.
Yeah.
And while I'm driving my motorcycle.
Yeah.
And crying.
Onto your helmet at the same time. Yeah. Well, that's our show for this week, and the name of the moon will be punishing you next week with another episode of Sailor Noob.
Goodbye, droids!